The Walking Dead Week in Review, Episode 44, When the Dead Come Knocking, Initial Reactions.
This is Mike from Evolution of the Apocalypse, and when I'm not out putting a bullet in a zombie's brain, I'm listening to The Walking Dead Week in Review with Jason, Jeff, and Mike.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review. I'm Jason, and with me is my fellow creep, Mike. How you doing? Also known as Captain Creeper.
That would be me.
Yes. We have Casey back in the house, welcoming us again. How you doing, Casey?
Good. How are you?
Great. And joining us, a special guest, because Jeff was unable to make it. We have Mike from Evolution of the Apocalypse podcast. Thanks for joining us again, Mike.
Not a problem, man. Love to be on the show. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. I have to say, after this past episode, though, I think blood was actually shooting out of my eyes, and I was trying to figure out a way to jump through the TV and kill the governor myself.
What a piece of crap.
Yeah, but it could have been worse.
It could have. Yes,
that was the thing is, that was the worst part of it is I was waiting for the, I don't want to give away stuff from the comic book too much because I know we've had a couple complaints, but it was like a train wreck because I didn't want it to happen, but I was waiting for the Michonne moment.
Yes.
Oh, it was with Abby?
With Maggie. Yeah,
that's what I meant.
I was waiting for it, and the whole time, I was actually getting more and more pissed as that was going on. And I kept thinking to myself, this is a weird disassociation that I'm actually physically getting mad at a fictitious character on a TV show that I'm watching in a box.
You wanted to punch him in the face, you know?
I did.
I think everybody did.
I was actually getting scared. I didn't think they were going to go there. And then when he started making her strip, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Thank goodness he was bluffing.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. And I don't have any military background. I mean, I like reading and studying like military tactics and stuff like that. And, of course, I have law enforcement background. But it's I know from a lot of the stuff that I read, interrogators, especially people that are, you know, not a part of the Geneva Convention or back during World War One and Two, one of the tactics that they would use a lot is actually, and especially on women, is to make them strip during the interrogation because, according to them, that was taking away the last comfort level for them to be able to hold on to.
It worked, and you know, the governor's one smooth dude. I mean, he comes in there and I mean, he knew what he was doing. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you know, from his standpoint, you got to think how far ahead did he actually plan that? Like, did he plan it right from the time he walked in or as the time he was walking there? Or was it just kind of a snap decision?
I get the feeling that's not the first time he's done that, you know? Or
yeah,
had to interrogate someone.
He was a little too smooth about it, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Casey?
Probably, I don't know. how long has he been planning that? I think it's like you were saying, he's probably done it before. So he didn't like send Merle back in there, so.
I think he knew Merle was going to just go in there and beat the crap out of her, and he didn't want he. You know, there's, you know, more ways to skin a cat, and I think that was his approach, you know.
Well, and as far as interrogation goes, it's actually been shown that generally physical violence does not work.
Nah, it just pisses them off even more.
Right, and it tends to make people more stoic.
Mm-hmm.
Merle
yeah,
is just
I mean, Glenn... Oh, go ahead, Casey.
Oh, it's just saying Merle is just a mad dog anyway. No telling what he would have done to her.
And, you know, I think Glenn knew that they weren't going to kill him because if they kill him, then they get nothing, you know?
Yeah. All right. So real quick, I want to let everyone know we want to hear from you and what you have to say about what happened with Maggie and the governor and Glenn, actually, on top of that. So give us a call at 503-454-6941 to leave us feedback. You can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. And definitely go to our website at creepercast.com and leave us a comment on this episode. Also, we are on Stitcher. So remember, if you have Stitcher and you don't want to listen to us on iTunes and sync it up every time, well, you know what? Fire up Stitcher, go on there, because the Creepercast is on there. And if you don't have Stitcher but you have a smartphone, get Stitcher. Stitcher is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and now the smarter way to listen to The Walking Dead Week in Review, and also Evolution of the Apocalypse, because you guys are on there.
Yep, so go over there, give us some thumbs up.
All right. Yes, opening, I want to, you know, jump back into the Glenn Merle. You know, it's one thing right at the opening, Merle threatening Glenn with violence and everything, you know, but then you also take it, he takes it another level when he threatens Glenn by using Maggie against him, which ultimately is what the governor did to get Maggie to talk. But you know, it's the idea that, you know, you can do whatever you want to me, but as soon as you threaten somebody else that I love, that's when, you know, people are going to break.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I had a feeling he was going to use Maggie in some way to make Glenn, because he stayed pretty stoic, even though he was being badly beaten. I knew they would have to use Maggie to get to him. I didn't think she would be the one that would give up everything.
No, that actually surprised me. You know, I thought that she would, you know, last a little bit longer. You know, it was the idea of the governor putting the gun to Glenn's head that did it for her, though.
Yep.
Even before that, she said, you know, she was more than willing to take whatever the governor was going to dish out when he had her on the table. But as soon as, like I said, you know, you threaten somebody else, as soon as the governor threatened Glenn, then she just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah, definitely. She definitely broke, you know, when she saw that gun go up there.
Now I'm really scared for whoever's left at the prison. There's nobody. They took all their best people with them to Storm Woodbury.
You got, so, let's see, you got Axel still there.
Crazy Carl.
Who's not so crazy anymore.
No. No.
I'm kind of starting to like him.
It's kind of weird, and especially with the talk that Rick had with him, where he's so, again, stoic. I that has to be the word of the day.
Yeah, they did a lot better job with developing Carl this year. Last year was kind of like he annoyed you.
Yeah.
This year he's more like of a presence. He's growing up, kind of. So, I mean, he's not so creepy anymore. He's like somebody now. He's not just his son. He's a part of the group now, more or less, you know.
That's the way you see it. I don't think he's creepy.
Last year he was creepy. This year not so much.
Yeah, last year he was like the kid that was like, you know, spying on people, especially when he was when they had what's his name chained up, and he's like sitting up and perched up on the in the barn, like staring down on him.
That was Randall.
Randall, yes, thank you.
I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I mean, it was all just creepy, and it could have just been the way they were writing his character out. It just didn't come across the way they wanted it to. I don't know, but they've done a lot better job with it this year. And I, you know, also too, I think that actor Chandler Riggs is growing up a lot. I think he's starting to learn what he's doing, you know.
Well, I don't really know what his background besides this is, but you know, after 3 years of acting now for The Walking Dead, I think he's really, like you said, he's grown up. He's matured himself,
exactly,
as a person. But two, after spending 3 years in that role, he's kind of, you know, learned and developed more of what Carl actually is internally.
Yeah. Like when they bust that gate open with Michonne, I mean, he was a part of the team.
Yeah.
You know, that was a nice scene.
And he took out them walkers like they were nothing. Speaking of Michonne, you know, that she comes and she gets saved by Rick and gets hauled inside. And, you know, you kind of feel bad for Michonne at that moment because here she is, you know, Rick pulls her inside and you understand where Rick is coming from. But at the same time, she just left the governor who was acting like he was going to help her, but not give her her weapon, you know, not trust her. And Rick, here's Rick doing the exact same thing. We understand why he's doing it is to protect himself. But from her point of view, you almost feel bad like she's having flashbacks to Woodbury.
Yeah. But he wasn't, it wasn't exactly the way that the governor did, you know, this is your home. You're welcome here. You can leave anytime you want. I mean, Rick locked her in a cell and said, we'll take this, you know, and took her sword. So I think she definitely knows that there's a different, you know, dichotomy going on there.
Well, and I think it didn't take long for her to realize that, especially when she watched him and Carol, that reunion right there, which was very bittersweet, by the way.
I told my wife, I said, what a way to bring you up and then to bring you back down.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, instantly, too.
Oh, yeah, within a minute.
Yeah. And she watched
They're really good at that, don't you think?
Yes.
Well, as I say, that's just the brilliance of the show. I mean, you, it goes from, you know, I mean, I went from, you know, hating Lori and wanting her to die. And then when she died, I actually felt bad.
I was the same way. And during the whole episode, I'm hating myself for wanting her to die for so long.
Yeah. Everybody felt that way, I thought.
You know, and then here's Michonne watching the reunion of Carol and Rick and, you know, the baby and everything. And I think at that point, Michonne realized that, you know, Rick is doing what he is to her more for self-preservation than what the governor is doing, which is to control somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. I'm just going down the list, so I'm kind of going in more or less chronological order. The next one that we see is Glenn when he's trying to bluff about how many people are at the prison or, you know, how many people are in their group. And he starts spouting off people, dead, alive, non-existing. And he does say Andrea's name in there.
Yeah, he does. I noticed that, too. And that's when he was like, really? You know?
Well, that's when Merle figured out that, you know, not everything is kosher in you know, Glenland.
In Glenland, Woodbury land.
And, you know, we also got racist Merle back for the first time this season, really.
Yeah.
You know, he definitely, his true colors are coming out again.
Yeah, they did.
Did we really have any doubt?
No.
Well, no. But, you know, it. You know, his comment, you know, he's just going to be hungry again in an hour. And I was like, really? We're going there, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I missed that one.
Yeah, that was one that it actually hit me afterwards when he said that. I'm like, oh yeah, that was a that was a racial slur.
Yeah.
It actually took me a minute to realize that because I think I was concentrating so much on what was happening with the walker that maybe it was sometime after during the commercial break that all of a sudden I'm thinking back and I'm writing down my notes and I'm like, oh yeah, that's what he meant by it.
Well, and Glenn just went all psycho badass there.
He didn't go psycho badass. He went like, you know, it wasn't Jackie Chan badass, but I mean, it was like, I mean, it was fighting from a chair with your arms taped straight to it.
That was good.
That's something you see like, you know, in martial arts or a something off of Burn Notice or something.
Rick trained him pretty well.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He's even Glenn's grown in this environment, you know, since the first season. You know, they've all became better warriors, I guess you could say, at this point.
Which makes you, I think we might have questioned this before, though, is do you think it happened naturally or do you think Rick actually trained them?
I think Rick had to do something because at the beginning of this season, I mean, they were using hand signals and stuff and learning formations. I think some of it came into play from Rick, yeah.
You know, and some of the reaction that people were using, you know, wasn't quite martial arts, but from a fight background, you know, they were definitely stylized known maneuvers.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Yeah, you got to figure that some point during that 8 months that we didn't see, or, you know, however many months it was, there wasn't just gun training going on. Of course, you know, they talk about how little ammunition they've got most of the time. So,
hey, do you guys remember last year when before Shane died, he was loading up the back of that Santa Fe that they're in? And he, underneath where the tire goes, you know, the spare tire, he was putting boxes and boxes of ammunition back there. Wonder if that's going to come into play now, because they took that Santa Fe to Woodbury.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. It's just a little, like, food for thought.
That's a really good thought. I completely
forgot about that as well.
Yeah, I completely... That completely slipped my mind.
Yep, when Lori walks over and Shane's getting ready to work on the windmill, he's putting boxes of ammunition back there. And I think they even make a comment, like, you got half of our ammunition back here or something. So,
and nobody else would have known about it.
No, because Lori's gone and Shane's gone. You know, it's there. I don't know. And, you know, they made a point to show you. So it's almost like, remember this kind of thing, you know? We'll see what happens, though.
Watch that again. I don't exactly remember.
Yeah, he was loading the boxes.
In the hatchback, you mean?
In like the Santa, you know, that
the
weird
white, yeah.
Or the Tucson, whatever it is, the Hyundai thing that they took to the prison with them. Or not to the prison, to Woodbury. Mm-hmm. In the back of that, underneath where the spare tire goes, Shane was, because remember, Shane was planning on leaving. And that was part of his plans on leaving. He was taking that stuff with him. But he didn't want anybody to know about it.
Hmm.
Now, if it was here's a question for you, being the survival guy. Do you think it would be smart? I often tell people one thing that you always want to do if you're bugging in, i.e. if you're staying at your house when everything goes bad, is take some of your ammunition and some of your firearms and bury them so that if you do get looted and they are able to take all your stuff, at least they don't get everything. Do you think it would be smart to do the same thing with your car, i.e. rip up floorboards or something and stash things in places that are really hard to get to just so that people couldn't, you know, hijack you?
Well, definitely, because if you come across people, like say there, Michonne, Daryl, and Rick, right? That was all, and Oscar. If, say, a group of 10 people come along and they're like, we want your weapons, okay, here. And then they let you go. At least you got a backup plan. So definitely I would have spare ammunition and spare weapons somewhere in there.
I mean, you could do that in cars pretty easily, or, you know, not easily, but at least doable. Rip up the floor.
Yeah, not even the floor. You know, any more of these newer cars, you know, the little side panels and stuff, you pop them off, put a handgun back there, you know, just little odds and ends stuff. Maybe a machete or two, you know, you could definitely do it. You can get creative.
Yeah. I don't know why that just popped into my head that I always thought about at home, but I never thought about the car as far as stashing stuff.
Yeah, I know people, like, around me that have stuff buried in, like, a cache, you know, outside of their homes, just in case.
Yeah, I tell people that, especially the two big things is weapons and food.
Mm-hmm.
Never put all your food or all your weapons in one spot.
No, definitely not. You definitely want to spread it out a little bit, because you never know. If you have to leave your home and you don't have time to grab stuff, you know that cache is there that you can go pick up, you know?
And then the other thing that I try to tell people is, you know, don't just dig up your backyard and put it in the middle of your backyard. Put it someplace where people are going to expect the earth to be disturbed. So, like in a flower garden.
Yeah, definitely. You know, flower garden, construction site. You know, if the apocalypse happens, there's always construction sites, you know, you can go to.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's places. Definitely, I would definitely do that. And I've been thinking about that. Like I said, I have friends that do that. And I just haven't yet.
I actually know one person that put a cache of stuff hidden underneath an overpass.
Yeah, that's a good spot.
That way they know that, you know, their bug out is going in this direction. So even if they can't grab their bug out bag as they're driving there, they can at least stop at this overpass, run up, grab their stuff, and then keep going.
Yeah, like, or a bridge, you know, underneath a bridge, you can build a false box and you know, screw it up there or nail it up there, and you know it's there. In and out quickly. Grab it and go.
Yeah, exactly. All right, heading back to Woodbury, where Andrea is taken to see Mr. Coleman, who is dying of, what was it, pancreatic cancer?
Yep.
And as he's about to bite the dust, they're doing an experiment, basically just a cognitive experiment.
And I've been waiting for this.
To see what happens when they turn, if they do keep any of themselves, which means that... this doctor that's doing this, and for some reason I keep trying to find his name, but I need to IMDb it because I keep missing it.
The actor's name or the doctor? Yeah, it's Milton.
Milton, okay.
I forget his last name in the show.
As he's doing this, it makes me think that he must now believe in the zombie hierarchy of of intelligence.
You know, to me, this goes back as far as season one, because I've been saying, you know, for a while, I think they do have some sort of memory. I really do.
Well, you have the one guy in the very first episode that was all but, you know, gazing at Rick as he was running around. And, you know, it almost looked like he was getting mad at moments.
You mean the other cop?
No, the walker that was in the suit.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right, yeah. Well, you know, what got me was the pilot episode. When you see that little girl?
Yeah.
She walks over and picks up the teddy bear.
So it's kind of like in the original Day of the Dead, where they may still remember more, muscle memory of stuff in your life.
And it's not just one person, I think. I think they've kind of hinted at it with a lot of different zombies. You know, the bicycle girl, did you guys watch the webisodes from season one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So
and season two.
You know, she told her kids to go to the park at the concession stand. And when Rick finds her, she's in the park. And she didn't die in that park. She died on the street.
Yeah, and she kept crawling her way to the park.
So, you know, they've hinted there. And then you had Morgan's wife.
Yeah, that kept coming up to the door.
And knew to turn the door handle.
Yeah.
So they've hinted at it, but never really. And that's why I've always wondered, and I've been waiting for this. And
you know, it's odd, though. They didn't really hint at it much past the first season.
Let's see. Second season?
Because I can't think of really any example. Everything that I can think of did come from the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really remember anything in the second season. Maybe Shane. I mean, he got up kind of mad. So, you know, I don't know what that was all about, but that could have been anything, you know. But yeah, so I've been waiting for that for a while. It's a shame it didn't go a little further.
Yeah, experiment fail.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Well, and that was the fault of him saying, you know, we have to let him out of these restraints. Well, that was stupid.
It was stupid. I saw his point, but it is stupid. I mean, yeah. why at that moment? He's not going anywhere. You know,
if you're gonna do an experiment on a Bengal tiger, you don't get in the cage with the tiger.
No, not at all.
So why did he want to let him loose just because he didn't think his arm was moving?
He saw his arm move, but he saw his arm grab the sheets, so he assumed that he couldn't lift his arm to be able to, like, signal.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, the only thing that I kind of made me wonder, though, is, you know, they had him restrained in the arms, they had him restrained in the legs, but they didn't have him restrained in the neck. So the way that he was bent over, the walker could have easily actually gotten up and bit him.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
So I kept watching that going, why aren't you restraining the neck at all?
Do you guys really buy the whole scratch theory?
Yeah.
What is it?
As far as the show goes, obviously you have to. because the Scratches, you know, they've already come to the conclusion that the Scratches carry whatever, you know, poison or bacteria that they have in them. That
you mean you only have to be scratched to turn.
But overall, the scratch theory, to me it seems like if the, you know, you have to assume that the reason that a bite is so devastating is because it's in the saliva. So what's on their nails that, you know, if you get scratched, that it is, you know, would turn you that quickly?
Yeah. I know a lot of people were saying that the big prisoner, I forget his name, that he was scratched, but he was more than scratched.
Oh, no, big tiny.
Yeah, I mean, he actually jammed a bone into that guy's back. So that's like a bite to me.
Yeah, that's a bite.
But we don't even know what happened to him because they killed him so quick. So, you know. I mean, he was going to turn, don't get me wrong. But I know a lot of people were saying that, you know, he was scratched. That was more than a scratch.
That was way more than a scratch.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty much a bite, if you ask me. I mean, he got blood into his blood.
Now, thinking back, though, is there anybody that has actually turned from a scratch?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't... Everybody who's turned has been, that we know of, has been bitten or died.
Yeah. I mean, the closest thing to that you could get is Dale, but he didn't even turn. He did, but... You know, he didn't get scratched. He got his intestines pulled out.
Yeah, but he never turned either. They killed him before he turned.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I think if you let a walker get that close to you, they're not going to just give you a little scratch.
No.
Well, no, but I mean, if you're trying to run by them and they scratch you.
But then again, I mean, Michonne's got a bullet wound in her leg, and she had guts poured out all over the front of her. I mean...
Yeah, that right then and there, that should have been, you know, that's an entrance point.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't have that wound wrapped up at that point. So, yeah. I mean, it's out of
I don't buy the whole scratch thing, honestly. I just, it would be, well, I guess for me, for one, it would just, no one on that show would not have turned already. Somebody, you know, they've all been cut or open wounds when dealing with walkers. So, it just doesn't work for me.
And they've all gotten blood all over their faces and stuff.
So right.
At some point, that blood had to have gotten into their mouth or their eyes.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know. It's just weird.
I'm still waiting for, like, the spitting walker.
Nice.
That just comes around and rather than bites you, just keeps spitting at you. You know, if you think of them as snakes, there are some spitting snakes.
Yeah, there are. So we'll see. I mean, that could happen. Or a spewing zombie, you know, when it's squirting blood or something.
So is this a thing now where we have somebody throwing a walker on one of our guys? This is like a new thing. First Rick and now Glenn.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He handled it, but...
And the makeup was really good on that zombie that was fighting Glenn.
Oh, definitely.
Have you guys talked to Michael Yeagers from The Walking Dead yet?
No, not yet.
You guys got to get up with him. He's a really cool dude. He'll come on the show, too. He's a really cool guy.
Who does he play?
He does a lot of zombies in The Walking Dead. He's been in season 2 and a lot in season 3. You probably know him most. Remember the walker that fell on Andrea at the end of season 2?
Yes.
That was him.
Oh, that's awesome. The one that got his head cut off by Michonne.
Yeah, and he was also one of the walkers coming up where Herschel was doing the unlimited ammo. So, you know, he had
the unlimited shotgun.
Yeah, the Konami cheat code, you know.
Well, I was going to go with, you know, the Hail to the King cheat code, but, you know.
No, that's pretty much what the Konami cheat code is, unlimited ammunition.
Yeah.
I want that shotgun.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I'm getting so distracted having you on. Did you see on Facebook there's somebody giving out the Kel-Tec shotgun that holds 15 rounds?
They're giving it away?
Yeah, they're doing a giveaway on there.
Really?
Yeah, I'll have to send you the link. It's awesome. So yeah, anybody on Facebook, go to the CreeperCast page, and I'll put it on there so that everyone can sign up. It's only until November 30th, so 5 more days, and then they do the drawing. And yeah, it's a giveaway of the Caltech, and I can't K something. 15 round assault shotgun.
Nice. That's pretty sweet. That'd be cool to get.
So 21 inches, like 1 inch over legal.
Yeah, really.
All right. So back to the show now. Since I get distracted.
Little baby has a name now.
Yes. Yep. Yes. And I have to. I put that on the other page. Yes, that goes back to the talk that Rick had with Carl, when you know Rick was talking about I might not be coming back, and Carl's just like, yeah, I know, I understand reality now.
Yeah,
I really like when Rick and Carl held their little talk.
That was nice.
They always have good scenes.
This is actually the first time though that we've seen Rick actually have a man to man with Carl since everything with Lori happened.
Mm-hmm. It's the first time he's really talked to him, period, about what happened. So that was kind of nice. It gave you that like nice feeling, that father son feeling there. So that was nice.
And yes, and so we had two choices. We either had ass kicker which is what Daryl kept calling her, and then naming the baby after Carl's, what was it, third grade teacher?
Yeah.
Third grade teacher, Judith, which is the name in the book, or in the comic, so.
Kind of interesting way that they came up with that name. Like, we all knew from the comic, but kind of a nice little way that they worked that into the story. It was kind of nice.
Yeah, and you knew that people were asking. They have to name it soon. They have to name it soon.
Yeah.
I was seeing actually quite a few things on different forums when people were asking when they were going to actually name Judith. Now, back to the other question of, my original thought of Glenn and Maggie taking over as the surrogate parents. Now that I'm looking at it, it's looking more like Carol and Daryl.
Yeah.
So you have Carol being very motherly. Daryl, he's like the father that he never had.
He's also playing a nice big brother to Carl.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Well, if everybody survives next week.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too. Speaking of survive, they do hit the road, and of everything that they have, they also have tear gas and flashbangs, which to me are two incredibly important things to have when you're trying to infiltrate anywhere.
Yes, definitely those flashbangs. I think they're going to come in some good handy.
Those flashbangs are so amazing. At some point, I would like to actually do a video showing people how to clear a room.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Because if you try clearing a house the way that you see on television, you're going to die.
Instantly.
I mean, it's the way that... and actually on this, for the most part, they were doing things fairly correctly, except they were hugging too close to the walls.
Yeah.
So, and they were crossing the pipe too many times, but... if you're by yourself and you have to clear a room, there's a certain way that you have to do it to try to keep yourself safe. And so if you're watching TV shows and taking tips from them, you're going to end up dying. But with that, having flashbangs to throw into the room before you enter, I mean, it gives you such an upper hand that the other person doesn't even stand a chance.
No, and I'm sure that they've never came in contact with those either. So they're going to come in handy for sure.
Especially paramilitary, most of the, I don't get the sense that anybody in Woodbury actually has military or combat experience.
Well, Merle says it in season one that he was in some sort of military, but I can't remember what it was. Or Daryl mentions that Merle was in the military. It comes up, but I can't remember how it came up.
But really,
he was telling that story on the roof about how he punched someone's teeth out and got.
Yeah, when he was going like cuckoo on the roof.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
I thought he was in the army or something.
Yeah.
But outside of him, nobody else would, you know, even know. First of all, you can't really react to a flashbang. That's just the way it works. But, you know, at the very least, you know, you do go through some sort of training on what to do if a flashbang goes off and how to react and try to gather yourself quickly again. Same thing with tear gas. Tear gas is another thing. I remember one of the first times I had to go through cert training, and we had to go through a house that we filled with tear gas, and I had the seal wasn't completely sealed on my mask, and oh man, that stuff leaking in, it makes your eyes burn, it makes it hard to breathe, you almost start panicking if you don't know that it's not really hurting you.
Yeah.
Because it your natural reaction is, oh my God, I'm drowning in my own lungs right now.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that. That's going to be fun.
What did you guys think of... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, just was wondering what you thought of what Michonne did to that guy in the cabin. Do you think she was justified?
Absolutely.
I think so. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. It comes down to, you know, with what Michonne did as far as killing the guy and taking him right through the neck, which was actually kind of cool looking. It comes down to the whole, you know, one life versus a dozen lives. And at the same time, my life is worth more than your life.
Yeah, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And so, yeah, if he would have ran outside, then they would have all been toast. So by doing that, you know, she just saved everybody.
Yeah, and it was getting to the point where he obviously wasn't going to be able to be controlled. So, I mean, they had to do what they had to do there.
Yeah, but they broke into his cabin and woke him up. He was obviously confused, kind of panicky.
Was he playing...
Yeah, but you know, there's panicky and then there's, you know, bordering on stupidity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, I get, and I don't even look at it like they broke in. They just kind of went in because they didn't have any other option. And when they tried to explain it, yeah, I get, you know, he had just woken up, you know, whatever. So you're, yeah, there's a little panic going on right at first, but you know, he just refused to listen to anything they said. And it was like, dude, chill the hell out.
Yeah. I thought somebody was going to get shot there.
I did too. I honestly did. I was waiting for it, especially one of the prisoners, you know, to get shot, you know, 'cause he's kind of a red shirt right now as far as the group goes.
Yeah. I figured somebody was going to take a bullet at some point there in that scene. So, they had to do what they had to do. I don't think what they did was justified. I think definitely it was.
Well, it shows how ruthless Michonne can be.
And she is.
But she has to be.
You know,
we're starting to see that side too, which is nice.
Michonne, you have to remember, Michonne is the epitome of self-preservation. And, you know, she's willing to do what she feels needs to be done right here and now to keep herself alive, and if that means keeping the rest of them alive, then that much the better. But for her, her first and only goal is to keep herself alive.
Mm-hmm.
And taking the guy out like that, you know, at this point was nothing. It was a Tuesday.
That's a
it
good
just
one.
Makes me a little nervous having her around. You know, what if she decides somebody in our group gets in her way and she has to take him out?
I don't know if she would necessarily take people out. She has shown that she has a little bit of a code as far as she doesn't just try to kill people that she doesn't like. But I think she would definitely sacrifice, at this moment at least, anybody in the group if it meant that she was going to die.
Yeah, she doesn't owe them anything yet, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
She'll do what she has to do.
Well, I guess we'll have to see. I'm reserving judgment. I still like her, but I think she's a little bit crazy, so we'll see.
Well, and that's Michonne. She's meant to be crazy. You know, you're talking about the girl that, you know, cut her boyfriend's arms off and then walked him around on a leash for a year.
Yeah. And what was she feeding him?
Kibbles and bits. Oh, by the way, survival tip, you can eat dog food.
Yes.
Dog food is human safe. Yeah, and then, of course, using him as the diversion, you know, that was just icing on the cake. So, you know, at least his death actually, you know, and I like how the writers did that. His death actually meant something.
Yeah, and they didn't just go into a blank room. It was kind of cool that, you know, they went in there and then they had a way out with him, you know.
Right, so by sacrificing him, they didn't just save themselves in one way, but they were able to, you know, like I said, have his death make his death have meaning. And so that almost in and of itself kind of justifies what Michonne did. And they're able to complete their mission, at least to this point.
And we got a cool Tom Savini-esque shot there, you know, with the guts being tore out.
That looked just like that scene when they were eating that horse. Yeah. Brought me right back there.
Kind of did. Give you a tip, most of the guts that they ever show in zombie movies are actually condoms filled with Jell-O.
Nice.
Lovely.
I think you spend way too much time researching this stuff, dude. Just saying.
Okay. Hey, I'm telling you, condoms filled with Jell-O make great guts. I've done it before.
Nice.
So, yes. And then we go to the end where Maggie gave up the prison. But not even just that. The look on Glenn's face when the governor brought Maggie in, topless, and then, like, started caressing her.
Yeah.
You could tell that Glenn wants to kill him. He wants to be the one to kill the governor.
Yeah, he's definitely pissed off.
Like, that would be, if I was in Glenn's shoes and Rick had the option to kill the governor, I would push Rick out of the way to pull that trigger.
Definitely.
That was so messed up. Ooh, I got so... It just made my skin crawl, him touching her like that.
He's got some serious creep factor going on there.
Yes, he does.
You know, and you don't hurt my Maggie. That's my Maggie. Don't hurt her.
Did that make you want to jump out of your chair?
That made me want to figure out how to jump through the TV so that I could kick the governor's ass.
Definitely.
And in fact, I think I posted it on Facebook.
Yes, you did.
And if I didn't think that I would actually, if it wasn't for my TV actually getting hurt, I may have actually tried it. I don't care about myself getting hurt. I heal. But my TV getting hurt? No. But then what makes it even creepier is after all of that, after everything he did to not just Glenn, but to Maggie, making her strip down, you know, all of the sexual harassment that he did, you know, borderline molesting. Then he goes back, and Andrea comes in, and he is such a two-faced prick.
Yeah. I mean, that guy, he's like, something else.
He just switched right then and there to acting like the loving.
That's what I'm saying. He's just got that total creep factor going on, and it just gives me the freaking heebie-jeebies.
And where did Andrea get the thong at in the apocalypse?
Oh, I'm sure someone in town loaned it to her.
Yeah.
Because she hasn't been wearing that for the past year. It would look a lot different.
Maybe they, you know, came across the Victoria's Secret.
Something.
I didn't notice the thong, but
Oh yeah, when it panned to her.
Yeah, when she was pulling her pants up.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You're on a podcast. I was gonna say you're on a podcast with three guys. We notice things like that. But yes, like I say, just the two-faced of it, and that's all I really have for this episode. Anything anybody else has? Because the one question I have for the next episode is, what side do you think Andrea is going to be on?
The governor.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before. You know, I mean, now that Lori's dead, I've got strong hate going on for Andrea, and I think she's being suckered into it, and. You know, I think maybe eventually she'll come back around, but at first she's going to side with the governor because she likes the safety of Woodbury and the illusion of that.
When she finds out what he did, she'll come back around. Those were all her friends that Miss Sean.
Yeah, but he tried to
kill her.
She bailed on them, though. I mean, she told Merle, here's where the farm is. I never looked back. She never intended on going back. She never went back to the farm to see if they were there.
Do you think she harbors anything, thinking that maybe they left her? I know that they kind of. I know they kind of touched on it. Merle did a couple episodes ago, but I mean, it's somewhere in there. She's going.
I mean, she was ready to leave with Shane at one point. You know, I think she was with him and. When she got away from him, she never looked back, just like she said. You know?
But she cared about, okay, failing that, she still cared about Michonne. I don't think if she knew that the governor tried to kill her, she'd stick with him.
You know what's interesting is this whole season we've seen, you know, two sides. And now we're starting in this episode to see them merge. And... the way that they slowly, I mean, they were all within, what, 500 yards from each other in that end scene there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, easy. So basically opposite sides of a fence.
Yeah, they're merging now. Now's where it's going to get really crazy.
Right at the end of the mid-season finale, you know, next week, this is always one of the hardest parts of the year. To me, the mid-season is almost harder than the season finale for me.
Yeah.
Because
you know it's coming, but you got to wait all that time before it comes.
Yeah, and you have to wait, 6 weeks?
Something like that. It's ridiculous.
I mean, and you think it, you're like, well, it's only a month and a half, but then you're like,
It's 2 months, isn't it?
Oh,
it
yeah,
came
8 weeks.
In February.
8 weeks, yeah, that's right. And you just that wait. So next week, you know, it's definitely going to be a big podcast trying to talk about everything that happens. And then after that, what'll be nice, though, you know, to kind of fill the gap is we do have our rewatch where we go back and actually dissect the episodes because, you know, as we record this, it's what did we do? Jump on less than a half hour after the episode ended.
Yeah.
So we'll have time to actually rewatch each episode knowing what we know now later in the season and be able to kind of dissect a few things. We will also have zombie survival tips, which my good friend Mike here, I just told him, and he agreed to join us, where we're going to talk about our top five survival tips that we've learned from the first half of this season.
Yep, definitely. That'd be fun. Looking forward to it.
Yes. I just can't believe how fast this season is going. I can't believe we're already...
And, you know, we're more episodes into this season than we did the entire first season.
Yeah.
I never thought they'd take Woodbury so, I mean, you know, storm Woodbury so fast and maybe lose the prison.
Well, you know.
We're not even through the season yet.
You know, and that's the hard thing right now is figuring out where they're going with this season. Me and Mike were talking about this on Facebook today, is that... You know, you keep thinking, well, that's something that they're going to hold off until, you know, Lori's not going to die until the midseason or have the baby until the midseason. Well, then she had the baby. Oh, you know, Maggie's not going to get raped until the midseason. Then this happens. And you're like, you don't know where they're going anymore.
No, and I think everybody thought that T-Dog was going to end up fighting Merle, and that's not happening.
No. So, the only thing that we can think is there is going to be, you're going to see Daryl fighting Merle.
And you know, it's interesting, in the preview for next week, at that point in the preview, they know that they're there. Like, you know, Merle knows that Daryl's with this group, and Rick says in the preview to Daryl, you know, your brother's there, you know? So it's interesting to where this is going to happen. We're going to get to see a lot of stuff take place, I think. A lot of gut checks.
Yeah. Yeah, and definitely leave us thinking for the 2 months straight. So I think with that, I think it's time we start the music. What do you guys say?
Sure.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, that was this week's episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review, When the Dead Come Knocking. And I like how they came up with that because, you know, basically it's all about that one scene where they're in the house and the dead are knocking at the door.
That was cool.
Remember, get a hold of us. Give us a call at 503-454-6941. Send us emails at feedback@creepercast.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. And on Twitter, twitter.com/creepercast. We're also on Stitcher. So if you don't have Stitcher, get Stitcher and listen to The Walking Dead Week in Review and the Creepercast podcast. Mike, can you tell people where they can hear The Evolution of the Apocalypse?
Yeah, you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, evolutionoftheapocalypse.com. Podomatic is our host site. You can go over and check all those things out and like our Facebook page, you know.
And you know what? For obviously, you're a Walking Dead fan. Mike and Evolution of the Apocalypse are great to track and pay attention to while watching the show. You guys are a blast.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun at it, so it's good times.
All right, Casey, thank you for joining us again. It's always a pleasure having you on. Sorry Loves wasn't able to make it here with us.
Okay, I don't mind being the only girl again.
Don't mean to single you out. Captain Creeper, hey, thank you, man, for joining us. I know it's late and you've got other things going on, but you know what? It's so great having the Creeper cast together for the entire Walking Dead Week in Review.
Yeah, and I enjoy doing it. It's just, you know, being, you know what it's like being married and having other things going on, and, you know, I do what I can.
And we appreciate it. All right. Thank you guys for joining us. We will see you next week.